Lori Houston's News for the Heart is dedicated to helping you give a voice to your own soul. Our hearts have the power to free us from pain and the struggles that keep us from awakening to our true essence. Join Lori now as we delve into our heart and soul to find the path that will open us to the possibilities and lead us to the life we love to live.
And good afternoon. This is News for the Heart, and today I have Tom Campbell with me. Always awesome to have you on the show, Tom. We like to talk about fear and how fear will help us or not help us in our growth towards love. We've been talking about virtual realities, and I think our first show was fabulous. Our second show was on past lives. And with that, there's just still a little bit more clarification that people wanted, not so much about past life, but maybe more about, you know, how many people. I know, obviously, we don't know exactly how many people are going to assist us as we grow forward. And we don't know if there's going to be a maximum, because that will determine on whether, you know, who we need in our virtual reality. So of the 7.5 billion people that we have on the planet, obviously not everybody is part of our, is not necessary in our growth. And so they can become non-players. But I mean, are they non-players? Are they just non-players in our virtual, like, there's the personal virtual reality of our life, which we talked about when we talked about virtual reality. And then there's the more global of this, you know, larger consciousness system in this virtual reality. I guess that's the kind of the question, is how do they sort of fit in? Does it, you know, is there, because we know that there are sometimes new souls, or are there new souls? You know, that kind of, how does it all sort of fit?
Okay. Well, yes, this is a virtual reality, which means that we are avatars. Our bodies are avatars, and we are consciousness, and we're the player playing right. this body. And by being a player, I mean we make all the choices right. for the body. So we make choice that you and I log on to the software, and we chat with each other for an hour the last Tuesday of every month. And so we get to make choices. And when we make choices, they affect other people. And when other people make choices, they affect us. Now, you're right. All, you know, 7.5 billion of us don't all affect just you and I, you know, or just me or you. There's some people on this planet, there's most of the people on this planet we will never meet. Right. We will never interact with, and we may not ever interact with anybody that they interact with. You know, so in that case, they have almost no effect whatsoever on our lives. But they do have effect on somebody else's life, the people that they do interact with. So they're just like us. They're no different than us. They just happen to be in a, you know, we happen to have a big world here with a lot of people, you know, spread over a lot of space. So we all don't interact, but we do interact with a lot of people. You know, we interact with all the people at work. We interact with our families, with our extended families. We interact with people we, you know, buy things from. You know, we interact in the marketplace. We interact when we go to social events, and we just interact with an awful lot of people. And then we, as a, you know, we as a larger group, you know, we have the family group, the work group, but we also have a national group. You know, whatever country you're in, you know, those interactions. You know, who did you vote for, and what are they doing? So part of the way things are in your political situation has to do with you and how you voted. And you know, maybe that's a small part, because it's one out of hundreds of millions. But still, your part counts. So your discussion counts. And you may talk to people and convince them to change the way they see things in the world and to, you know, vote differently or whatever. So you're a interactive partner on the national level. And in as much as your nation gets involved in with other nations, then you're kind of a minor player in that game as well. Not nearly as big a player as you are, say, in your own family. You know, there you're a much bigger player. But all the people all over the planet are all just like us. They're no different. They're not non-player characters. They're just interacting with each other, trying to grow up, just like we're trying to grow up, trying to get rid of their fear, trying to find, peace and happiness and satisfaction and all those good things that come when you get rid of fear. So they're all out there doing the best they can with what they've got. Okay, so that's the world. Now, in the bigger picture, that's our virtual reality. And our virtual reality is what we call our universe. It's our physical universe. That's our virtual reality. So we have that. But then we have the structure that creates that virtual reality, and that's the larger consciousness system. It's the source of the virtual reality. And part of that larger consciousness system is the computer that computes this virtual reality. You know, it computes, you know, my body, and you're talking, you know, to your body sitting there in Canada, you know, and I'm sitting here in Alabama, and, you know, we're having this chat, and it computes that. It computes the stuff in the background. It computes all the things that are going to end up on your video. And those things are, you know, they make up our physical reality. They're computed by part of this larger consciousness system. Also part of the larger consciousness system is us as consciousness. We individuated units of consciousness are a part, and we play in this virtual reality that's computed by the larger consciousness system. So when you get down to it, everything is a part of the larger consciousness system. That's the one, the source. We're a part of that, and we're a part that I call individuated units of consciousness. The computer computing this is a part of it. So everything in our existence is a part of this larger consciousness system. So consciousness is fundamental, and everything else is really derived and generated by consciousness. So consciousness is the fundamental thing. And this universe is a virtual reality, not one that's been programmed like The Sims, but one that's been evolved. Starts with initial conditions and a rule set, and then you punch the run button, and those initial conditions change according to the rule set, which defines the rules of how things can change. And it just evolves, and eventually evolves people like us, like humans. It also evolves dogs and cats and other conscious entities, and all conscious entities, us and the dogs and the cats and the bumblebees, we're all trying to, you know, do the best we can with what we've got at the time. We're trying to make better choices. So that's true of all of it. Now, yes, our population grows, right? We had 7.4 billion before we had 7.5 billion, you know, our population keeps getting bigger. And as it does, you need new players. You need more players to play the game, so the system can put in more IUOCs. Well, how does the system make an IUOC? Well, it takes the average IUOC that's playing in this game, does a copy, and then does paste, paste, paste. Now it's got four more IUOCs just that are pretty average, like everybody, you know, kind of on the same more or less level that the average is here. And now those players can log on and play a body. So new avatars get created because of the rule set. The rule set says that has evolved that, you know, we have sex, we make babies, and we have more avatars that are human. Same with the raccoons, you know, and the dogs and the cats and the bumblebees, you know, and as this grows, then these are empty seats, if you will, that need an individuated unit of consciousness to play them. So that is done by creating more individuated units of consciousness. Now, we as consciousness have an ability to process information, to remember. We have to have memory. We have to be able to process, which means we have to be able to tell whether we are getting closer or further away from our goal. And our goal is to minimize our entropy, which is the same as get rid of our fear. Have a higher quality of consciousness. These are all ways, spiritual growth. These are all ways of saying the same thing. So that's what we're doing here. And as we evolve, the whole system evolves because we're part of the system. Right. So the system wants us to succeed in our evolution. because its evolution is also fueled by our evolution. So it is helpful to us. You know, it will work with us to help us evolve if we're interested in trying, making an effort to evolve. We'll get some help from the system, because, you know, it's in the system's best interest to help us evolve as efficiently and as best that we can. So that's kind of the big picture. And the reason IUOCs can be copied and pasted, like I say, we are also memory, computer processing. We have a purpose, which is to lower our entropy or get rid of our fear. You know, we can be created in the system, because we're just a piece of that system. So the system can create another piece called an IUOC, another part of itself. So that's how it happens. So when you die, all right, you are consciousness. You don't die. Your body dies, because the rule set, you know, says that you get old, you know, you run out of steam, your body doesn't work so well anymore, and eventually you die. And when that happens, it's your avatar that's died, not you as consciousness. You as consciousness are immortal. You keep on keeping on, because you have logged onto this game in order to grow your quality, you know, get rid of your fear. That's what you're here for. So when your character dies, you go get another character. You log on to another character, and then you make all the choices for that character's life. And that's kind of how the whole system works. So in the very beginning, when our virtual reality was just evolving life forms that had interesting choices, the system played all the characters. Oh. It played everybody. So everybody was an NPC. An NPC means the computer that's computing the virtuality is also playing the character. That's really what a NPC, non-player character, is. In World of Warcraft, that would be the monsters, you know, that live in the cave. Those are characters played by the computer. There's no player out there playing that monster. You know, the computer plays the monster itself. So all the characters were NPCs to begin with, until we started to evolve life forms that had interesting choices. And, you know, we finally got, say, to humans. And then there's a consciousness, an IUOC, individuated unit of consciousness, that is operative at that level. So now they started to log on to play the humans. You see, but the system had to play everything until it evolved. Then you get bumblebees, and there was some consciousness at the level of bumblebees that then started to play bumblebees. Okay. Or maybe a whole swarm of bumblebees, you know, a whole hive of bumblebees. So that's kind of how the big picture works. So we're consciousness is the fundamental thing. We are not our bodies. We are consciousness. Our bodies are just avatars. And the reason we needed this virtual reality to play in was because in order to grow up, you have to make choices, right? You make good choices, you get rid of your fear. You make bad choices, you develop more fear. So it's a matter of making choices. Well, this virtual reality gives us very meaningful choices with consequences. That's why we needed it. Otherwise, we were just individuated units of consciousness chit-chatting, like in a big chat room, with other individuated units of consciousness. You see, consciousness communicates. What it does, it creates information, and it can send and receive that information. So without the virtual reality, our default reality is like a big chat room. Well, in this big chat room, there are very few choices that have any consequences at all. You know, there's literally no consequences there. You can tell lies, you can tell the truth, you can turn, you know, this person on or off. You can, if you don't want to talk to somebody, well, you just turn them off, like, you know, clicking a little X on your web page, you know, that makes the website go away. You know, or you can turn them on by, you know, putting in their URL and, you know, they come up. So it works very much like our internet works, in a sense. So you have this big chit-chat space with very few consequences. So evolution was very slow. It still was evolving, but it was very, very slow. So the system then makes this virtual reality where you have, you know, choices that are, you know, what, you know, life and death choices all the time. Choices that change your life, choices that change other people's lives. And within all of that interaction of all the players making choices that are interacting with other players, with other players' avatars, this very rich soup of choice becomes available to us. You know, we can wallow around in self-pity. That's a choice. We can be victims. That's a choice. But that's a choice that takes you nowhere. That's a poor choice. Or we can be people who are positive and out there trying to learn and grow. And those are all good choices because we're making an effort to understand the nature of ourselves, our reality, why we're here, and starting to evolve the quality of our consciousness. So then those are good choices. Most people don't really have a clue why they're here. They're here because they're here. They have no idea that there's any point to it other than, you know, drinking beer, you know, eating food, having a good time. And they just kind of, they still have to make choices, and their choices still affect people. And they're still often life and death choices. You know, what do? You know, you get married, you have children, you have responsibilities. You know, you have people that depend on you and people you depend on. And you have this interactive web of responsibility and choice, which if you make good choices and you shoulder those responsibilities and you take care of those people that depend on you and you're not self-centered, you know, you're not full of fear, then you start growing up, becoming more like love, becoming more cooperative, becoming more caring and more compassionate. And that's the whole reason that we're here. So that's kind of the big picture. And new IOUCs can be made just with copying an average kind of IUOC. It's all information. It's big digital information system. So things can be copied and pasted. Now, once you make one, then you started with you know, that has free will and you give it choice. It has free will. And now it will continue as long as it has something to do, you know, and that means as long as it has some virtual reality in which it can interact in. So it can interact in the big chat room, but that's dull and boring and, you know, you don't go very far, or it can get into a virtual reality. And our universe is not the only virtual reality. There are other virtual realities out there that you could log on to. Once you start logging onto this one, you tend to continue to log onto this one because you already know the ropes. You know how it works. You don't have to learn everything. You know, like if you were suddenly teleported to some rural spot in China, it would take you 5 or 10 years just to understand the culture enough that you could really interact with it successfully. At first, you wouldn't have a clue. You know, you wouldn't know the language. You wouldn't know the customs. You wouldn't know what things meant. You'd probably do things that were rude because you didn't know better, or you may not, you know, appreciate something that you should appreciate because you don't know any better. So it takes a while just to learn the basic ways that, you know, people get along, the basic cultures and that sort of thing. So we tend to go back to the same virtual reality time and time again, just because that's easier than going into one where you have to learn everything, you know, from scratch. So, but you don't have to. You always have free will. So you don't have to go back and take on another avatar if you don't want to. You can just say, no, don't want to do that. Or I don't want to go back to that virtual reality. I want to try something else. And you have free will. Nobody will ever force you to do anything. So that's a good thing. You know, free will is a key idea. You have to have free will in order to have consciousness. You have to have time in order to have consciousness. Because if you don't have time, then you don't have growth. Nothing ever changes with no time. Change defines time. So if you're in a system where there's no time, then there's no change. No growth, no evolution, no progress, nothing happens. It's just static, you see. So a place with no time is a place that has nothing else either. It's just a static thing where nothing ever changes, nothing ever grows, nothing ever evolves, no choices are ever made. You can't make a choice without time, because you have before the choice and after the choice. Your choice changes things. So free will and time and consciousness, all logically necessary for the others to exist. You can't have any of those without having all three of them. You have to have time, you have to have free will, you have to have consciousness. Those things all exist. And the opposite of that, kind of the opposite philosophy of that, is the philosophy where you really deny time. There is no time. Time is an illusion.
Right.
You deny free will. There is no free will. Free will is an illusion.
No, that's true.
And consciousness also you deny, you know, there is no consciousness. And what you end up with, though, is a dysfunctional place that goes nowhere, does nothing, has no point, has no purpose, has no, you know, beginning or end or nothing. It just is and never changes, which is basically a dead end. You know, it's a dead space. It doesn't produce anything. It's not good for anything. It just is. And that's all there is to it. Now, if you are a materialist, then you are in that space where there is no time, no free will, you know, no consciousness, no choice. You're in that frame, because if you are a materialist, you also have to be a determinist. Materialism requires determinism. Okay, so the three on that end are materialism, determinism, and no time. And, you know, it's not that that is an impossible state. It's just a useless state that doesn't do anything, go anywhere, or have any value. It's a completely valueless state that isn't, you know, that cannot create or produce anything, because to create requires change. Before you create it, after you create it, right? To make a choice requires time. And to make those choices requires the choice maker, which is consciousness. So that kind of sets it up philosophically. You know, in one system, you have consciousness is fundamental, and consciousness requires time and free will. And on the other one, you know, materialism, determinism are what's fundamental, and there can be no time, consciousness, or free will in that state. So, unfortunately, our science has kind of backed itself into a corner, because we believe that this reality is material. At least science starts out with that. I say we. Not a whole lot of people other than the science types actually, you know, believe that. But if you believe that you're in a material reality, that this is not consciousness and a virtual reality, but rather material reality, then that material reality has the rules, and its rules, you know, are deterministic. And if it's deterministic, then there can't be any, you know, you can't have any choice. Everything's determined.
Right.
If you don't have choice, then there's no choice maker required. So you don't have consciousness. And if you don't have choice and you don't have consciousness, then time doesn't really mean anything, because everything's determined. Everything is now, and it's the same way it's going to be later. It's the same way it was before. You see, nothing changes. It's all determined. So you have this set thing that is always going to go through a set process, and nothing changes. So you just end up with a zero of no value. So that's kind of the big picture around the whole idea of consciousness, virtual reality, and why the virtual reality is there, and what we're doing here, and what our purpose is. So I've kind of hit all the highlights of the whole system in that. So then you see that when we talk about us and our choices, well, these are choices. Not only, do I get up and go to work this morning, you know, that's a choice, but they're choices about how you feel. You know, somebody insults you and you get angry. Well, that fact that you get angry is a choice. You don't have to get angry. You do get angry because that's your habit and that's your belief. And you have beliefs and fears that create that. But that's something of yours. That's not something that's imposed on you from without. And if it's yours, you can change it. Your consciousness, you can change things. You see, you can make choices. And the choice isn't to not act angry, but to not be angry. You see, that's the choice we want to make. So it's not about behavior. It's about who you are at the core. Okay, so I don't know. Hopefully I answered a whole bunch of your questions all in one big lump there with kind of giving a summary of how this, you know, the basic idea behind this concept. Now, interestingly enough, science today is coming to the point of realizing this is a virtual reality. And it's not just, you know, oddballs like myself who are out there, you know, out on the fringe, but science, you know, every major university in the world, every that has a physics department, if they have a physics department, they probably have quite a few physicists in that physics department that think our world is a virtual world. Nice. And that's because that's what their experiments have been telling them. Now, scientists, physicists, particularly, don't know what to do with that concept is the problem. And they've been in this boat for about 100 years. About 100 years ago was when quantum mechanics as a science was born. And it was born because of this one experiment called the double slit experiment. And this double slit experiment had a result that said that this is not a physical reality, that this is a probabilistic reality. And there are no physical particles. There's only probabilities of particles being certain places or doing certain things. And that there really are no fields. There are no particles. It's a computed reality. That was the idea. That was the result of this experiment back in the early 1900s, 1915 to 1925. It was in that area, that era when this was all understood. And at the time, physicists got real excited in the sense that they said, wow, we've got a whole new look at what reality is. We thought it was material, but it's not. So this is really exciting, but they didn't know how to take the next step. It's like, well, okay, we know that. And they also knew that it had to do with consciousness, but they didn't know how to put that in an equation. They didn't know what the logic of it was. So they were just stuck. It's like, all right, we have this fact that this is not a material world, but, you know, what can we do with it other than state it and then ignore it and go on and keep acting like it was a material world? Because that physics works. That's Newtonian physics, right? So they didn't know what to do with that idea. Well, 100 years later, now there's been many, many different kinds of experiments that have all led to the same conclusion, and that is that this is a virtual reality. So physicists are back to the point of trying to deal with that as, okay, that seems to be the way the world is, but what does that mean? Where do we go with that? You know, how do we use that to derive new understandings? You know, they just seem to be stuck, and they're still stuck. Although a much larger number of them are coming back to the idea that this is a virtual reality. They kind of ignored it after the double slit. But because we now have not that one experiment, but hundreds of experiments, different kinds of experiments, they're all not double slit experiments. Lots of things are telling us that this is a virtual reality. And the physicists are still stuck on what that means. So they're not going to say that, you know, consciousness is the computer. They're not going to say those things because they just don't know where to go. They're just stymied is the problem. But when you think about what does it mean to be a virtual reality, and the scientists all agree that it means this is a computed reality. That's what being a virtual reality means. It is computed. Well, then it only takes a little bit of logic to say, if it's computed, it can't be computed here. It can't be computed from inside the virtual reality. It has to be computed from outside the virtual reality. Virtual realities can't just begin computing themselves. You see, something that's outside the virtual reality has to be computing the virtual reality. All right, so we have that. And if we let go of the determinism, materialism, no time, no consciousness, no choice, because that's a dead end and doesn't, like we said, that doesn't go anywhere, it doesn't do anything. It's a null kind of idea. Then we have to start with the idea that a virtual reality is a space where the computer is non-physical to the virtual reality. Well, a virtual reality works with avatars, computed things. Okay, it doesn't work with, what would we call it, real things. It doesn't work. Your elf and your Sims character are just virtual characters. They're avatars. They don't really have anything inside them. There's nothing there but the pretty picture on the screen. And that's the way we are. Our bodies and our physical world is just the pretty picture on the screen. All the choice making is made by the player. And the player has to be in the same reality frame as the computer, because the player and the computer are really just having a conversation. The virtual reality just shows the player what the results of his choices are. That's all. So you're a player and you say, elf, stand up and dance. And your elf gets up and starts to dance around, and the computer shows you a picture of your elf dancing. And you look at that picture and you say, that's good, elf, now sit down. And the computer shows you a picture of your elf sitting down. You see, the picture is just something to let the player see how his choices are affecting the avatar and affecting others. So it's just a feedback. It doesn't really exist. There aren't any elves. There aren't any little people running around, in the Sims game. It's just ones and zeros lighting up pixels on a screen. Well, that's the way our reality is. So that leads us logically to the conclusions that it is computed in some other reality other than our physical universe, and it has players that are in the same reality frame as the computer that's computing it. Well, the only thing that makes any sense at all is that the computer is consciousness. See, consciousness is the key thing here. Consciousness is the choice maker. It's the choice maker that makes choices for the avatar. So you need a choice maker. That means you need consciousness. And the player and the computer have to come from the same reality. So the computer is also out of that same consciousness reality, if you will, that the player is. So consciousness is fundamental. The player is a piece of consciousness. The computer is a piece of consciousness, because consciousness is nothing other than an information system. So the larger consciousness system can configure itself to be a computer, or it can configure itself into an individuated unit of consciousness. It can configure itself into either one of those. And it can also be the operating system, the thing that manages and gets everything communicating to each other in the right way. And that's then the larger consciousness system that we're a part of. So that's the overview of how it all fits together and why we're here and what we're doing and the rest of it. Now, in order for this consciousness to work, to make this virtual reality work, okay, it has some rules it has to use. And one of the rules is that when you look at something new, it has to know what to render, right? So if you're, it has to calculate, or it has to render something. So if you go to some place that's never been seen before, you put your mask on, you walk off into some place that nobody's ever been before, and you take off your mask, the computer has to render something there. It can't just render a black void, around you. It has to put something there. And the way it puts things there is it looks at all the things that could possibly be there, and the probability that each one of them might be there, and takes a random draw from that probability distribution of the possibilities. That's how it does that. Now, what makes things possible to be there? Well, there's a couple of restraints. If it's a good virtual reality, then you have to have continuity. You have to have historical continuity. You can't have things just changing. You know, you can't walk out the door of your house one day and you live on the ocean. And the next day you walk out that same door, you're on a mountaintop. That would be a discontinuity. You know, that would be a reality that just was flaky. You couldn't depend on it. It wouldn't have any causality. Stuff would just kind of randomly occur. Well, you need a causality, and that causality then describes a history as time moves forward, and you have to be in consonance with that. So it has to be something that gets along with or agrees with our past. It can't be something that's just off the wall, that doesn't have anything to support it, you know, in the record. So that's one thing, and it has to abide by the rule set. You can't get anything that isn't, you know, according to the rule set that defines the virtual reality. So when you have those two constraints, then there's only a certain number of things that are possible. Right? There's only a certain number of things that are possible. You're going to open your door, and if your house was built on a beach, then whenever you open that door, you're going to look out there, and there's going to be the beach. You're not going to be in the mountaintops, because that's required. Okay, now there may or may not be, you know, a crab on the beach. That's something that the system, you know, when you look out that door, whether or not there's a crab on that beach, you know, may have to do with what's the probability that a crab's going to be there. Or if crab is a conscious thing, then the crab makes its own choices and decides whether it's going to go onto that beach or not. And that will then affect the probability of what you get to see, because you and the crab are interactive. Two individuated units of consciousness, both making choices that can interact with each other. You know, so that's kind of the way it works. So you dig a hole in the ground, and what you find there is not known. Well, it may have been known thousands of years ago, but it's all been lost. You know, what's under that ground now, we don't know. So there's a probability there may be a dinosaur bone, or a probability there may be a rock or a root or a gold coin or all sorts of things. But mostly it's probably just going to be more dirt. So when you take that random draw, what's in that next shovelful, most of the time it's just going to be dirt, because that has the highest probability of being there. But every once in a while, it's going to be something unusual, because there are things that are maybe only one in a million, but you know, you dig a million shovelfuls, and every once in a while, you're going to find something that's not just dirt. It's going to be something. It's going to be a fossil, or it's going to be a tooth from a saber-toothed tiger, or a bone, or something else, a piece of pottery from some civilization that was there before you, that you'll find something there. So that's how things work. So the astronomer gets a brand new telescope that can see further than anybody can see, and he looks into the sky. And of course, there's a constraint. When he looks in the sky, he's not going to see dancing hippos. He's going to see things that look like stars and gas and other kinds of things that are out in outer space. So it's constrained. But there's thousands of things that might be there, and a random draw is taken, and that's what he sees. So that's how the system puts, you know, draws, knows what to draw, what to render when it's unknown. What might be there? Well, okay, in order to do that, it has to know what all those probabilities are, all the possibilities and their probability of each one. And to do that, it has to keep a database. And we, because we're consciousness, we can get in those databases, and we can see what is the probable future, and we can see the past, because that probable future that the system needs to do its calculations, eventually, as time goes by, it becomes data that is past. So we have these databases, and that's how we can do things like remote view, or look at somebody's health body, or go look at a past life, or any of those other things, because it's all in that database. The database has to be there because that's how the system is run. That's how the system works. You see, so that data is there. We're consciousness. We're part of that system. We're not relegated just to hanging out here in this virtual reality. Well, we have to make choices for our avatar, but we also can close our eyes, grab onto a different data stream other than the one defining this one, and go off and explore the whole system, the whole consciousness system, because we're a part of that system. So that's what people do when they meditate. They let go of this data stream, this virtual reality set of data, and they get hold of something else. That's what people do when they go out of body, when they remote view, when they see auras. All of that is just letting go of this reality and picking up data from elsewhere, getting some other data stream that defines an alternate reality. Hmm. So that's kind of the logical bare bones of the system. Did I create any questions in your mind while I was going through all of that?
Yeah, but some of them were so far back, I'm not sure I can get there. But okay, so we're in this chat room, and we're just chatting away, and we're so probably 100 years ago we saw how this virtual reality was changing, and thought, this would be a great time to start getting involved. Or we may have been here for thousands and thousands of different lives and continued on. So, but I'm assuming that a lot of the growth has happened since that.
The more you understand and the more you grow, the easier it is to grow more. So the growth becomes an accelerated thing. It starts off really, really slow. So let's just take humans, for instance. Humans have been walking around as humans for about 200,000 years. That's all. Before that, our ancestors may have been chimpanzees or something else, but you know, things that we call Homo sapiens were about 200,000 years ago. So in the history of our planet, that's not much time. That's just, you know, the last little bit of time. So in 200,000 years, you know, look at the first, starting at that beginning of that 200,000 years, and let's go through about 190,000 of those 200,000 years. And that takes us, what, to 10,000 years ago. Well, 10,000 years ago, we're not a whole lot different than it was 200,000 years ago. I mean, yes, climate's changed and a few other things, but basically you had bands of humans and the underlying, I guess, political and organizational and economic idea was that of a warlord, you know, that you had groups of people collected together for mutual defense, and they, they had their territory and they would defend that and that sort of thing. It was that basic agrarian warlord hierarchy kind of a thing. And that lasted for a long, long time. So just go back 10,000 years ago, and where the beginnings of civilization started to take place, and we ended up with cities, and everybody didn't have to do everything. We had people who specialized, you know, you had the cobblers and the farriers and the, you know, the seamstresses. You had different people did different things so that everybody could have shoes, because there was a cobbler that made shoes better than anybody else made shoes. So then they just didn't do anything but make shoes, and they could trade their shoes for the things that they didn't do, like grow crops. So we had that sort of thing, but you need a stable social environment for those things to develop. And that took a long time to develop. And then you needed a lot of people around to make that work, because if everybody's doing their own thing, then you need other people around to grow the crops and to make the shoes and to do other functions. So then you had cities, and in the last 10,000 years, changes still were slow, very, very slow. If you go 10,000 years ago, 9,000 years ago, you know, count on up like at 5,000 years ago, and there still wasn't a whole lot of change. You know, 4,000 years ago, 2,000 years ago, and then we look at maybe the last millennia, and we see changes starting to happen more and more rapidly. And now look at just the last 200 years, how far we have come, how much change we've had in just the last 200 years. So that gives you the idea that this is accelerating, you see. So we're now at the knee of this curve. You know, you have a curve and it doesn't grow very much. It just about straight grows a little and a little more, but then it gets steeper and steeper and steeper and takes off. Well, we're right at that place where it's starting to take off. You know, we've had more change in half a century. Mm-hmm. I mean, just go back 30 years. Go back 30 years and there weren't any cell phones. There wasn't any internet, you know, not like it is now. The internet just started really to be something that people got involved in like the 1980s, right? So you go back 30, 40, 50 years and our life was totally different. Structures were different. Politics were different. People didn't connect like they do now. Now, you know, somebody gets an earthquake or a famine or somebody, you know, tries to blow, you know, neighbors blow each other up or whatever, and everybody knows about it. You know, news is world news now, not just local news. We get to look those people in the eye who are starving to death over there on the other side of the world. And we should have some compassion for them, you know, so we want to send help. We want to donate some money to the relief fund that goes over there that helps them do things. So it's just a different world. If you go back even a couple of hundred years, most people wouldn't even been able to tell you the name of the places that were someplace else in the world. You know, we didn't even have much of a sense of what was there and what the cultures were like and what the people were like. And certainly we didn't know whether they had an earthquake or not, because that news took months and months to travel by ship. So you didn't, it was all over. It'd been long over before you even knew that it happened. So it's a different world now. And that is just going to get faster and faster and faster, so that, in the next 50 years, we will have more change than what we've had in the last 100. And so on, you know, it's going to go. So we're now at a point where we can really make some big changes. We don't have to be in this warlord mentality of a few people in charge, you know, at top, and everybody else is a peasant and, has to kind of grab hold of a crank and crank the machine. You know, we don't have to be like that anymore. We've been like that for a long time. So these are very exciting times where change is available to us, and we just have to make good choices such that that change is a change that leads toward more cooperation, more caring, you know, more empathy, more connectedness, and not the opposite. You know, we need to value diversity, not be frightened by it. You know, so we have to change our attitudes and grow up, but that's going to happen faster and faster. So maybe in 20 years or 30 years, this will be a different place. This will be dramatically a different place. Just in a, you know, by the time our grandkids, you know, or mature adults, they're going to be living in a different world than we live in. Change is happening that quickly. And change can go either way. You can have change based on good choices that evolves toward caring and love, and you can have change that, you know, comes out of poor choices. It goes backwards and de-evolves into more, warlords and peasants. You know, could go either way. It depends. It's our choice. But whatever it does, it'll be dramatic. It'll be dramatic, and you're going to have a lot of change coming. And if we go backwards, well, then it'll slow down for a while until we get back up to this point where it's got all the potential that we have now. We have a lot of potential right now. So if we go backwards and put ourselves back, let's say we have a big nuclear war or famine, or, you know, we finally kill ourselves with our own garbage or something like that, pollution and so on. If we went back, 400 or 500 years, well, it'd start to slow down again, change, but it would keep on cranking, and pretty soon we'd be back here. And then we'd have another chance to do it again and do it better this time. So the good news is we are going to get there. One day we're going to live in a society that is caring and gentle and looks at everybody as a valuable, you know, part, every person, not even just people, you know, every entity out there, every conscious critter, including people, are going to be valued. The environment's going to be valued. We're going to get there someday where it's a kinder, gentler place to live. But we have to make the right choices. But we will get there because evolution is slow, but it's relentless. It never stops chugging along. So someday we will arrive at that spot, but we don't know how long it's going to be. We could do it as quick as a couple of decades, and we could do it as poorly as another century or another millennia. Who knows the choices we'll make over the next couple of decades. But it's an exciting time to be here. And our choices were never more important. You know, that choice that I mentioned before, like a choice to get angry or not, a choice to be a victim or not. You know, those choices have never been more critical. If we can make good choices, we can turn this place into a lovely place to live for everybody in a short amount of time, a couple of decades. And if we make bad choices, well, we'll have just more of the same. You know, whether the warlords or corporations or whether they're, you know, politicians or, you know, whatever they are, we have different names for them, depending whether they're political or civil or religious or whatever, but it's the few who lead the many, who dominate the many and kind of dictate to the many. That's where we've been for almost 200,000 years. We're just getting to the point where we're ready to break out of that into new forms. So I'm very enthusiastic that this is the beginning of a really good times are ahead. Hopefully shortly ahead, decades ahead, not centuries ahead or millennia ahead.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm just trying to bring this ball back together so that we're at a place where we are understanding. Okay. So we're in this virtual reality. We are now at a kind of precipice of, mm-hmm. you know, making the right type of choices. There really is no end point, though. We continue to grow. Even if we have a place where everything is compassionate and loving, would we still be growing?
Yes.
Okay.
We still have to grow.
Right.
You see, we still have to grow for a couple of reasons. One, you never get to the point where you're perfect.
Right.
You never get to the point where your entropy is zero. You can only approach zero. And as you evolve more and more, you have to keep putting energy into that evolution. Because if you stop trying, if you stop working on it, if you stop putting energy into it, that's when you begin to de-evolve. Right. So it's not like you get there, you know, it's not like piling up rocks, you know, and you can pile up rocks and those rocks will always stay piled that high. Even if you go away and come back 100 years later, those rocks will still be there and they'll still be at about the same height. They may have worn down a little with erosion, but they're not going to change much. But with consciousness, it's not quite like that. You erode more quickly. If you stop trying to lower your entropy will begin to increase. It takes effort. So you never get to the point where you're done. You always have to work on it. And as soon as you think you're done, that's when you start backsliding and de-evolving. And ego starts to grow and those beliefs start to, you know, replace the facts. And now you have to get working again and get yourself back to where you were. So there is no end point, but we can all live in a much nicer place. We don't have to live at this point on the curve. Let's get a little further up that curve to where we do have a gentle, nice place to live. And when we get there, we will all have the maximum amount of free will, the maximum amount of choice, the maximum amount of individual, doing what you want to do. It won't be that we'll be a bunch of ants, you know, where everybody's part of this big collective. It doesn't work like that. It only works like that if the collective is based on fear. When the collective is based on love, then everybody in the collective wants you to be productive and happy and what you want to do. So if you in one of these loving collectives and you say, you know, I'd really like to just quit work and write poetry or paint pictures or something. You know, I'm tired of this work. Well, the whole collective and everybody in it will want you to do that because that's what you want to do. They're not going to say, oh, you know, stop that. Get back to work. You know, you got this crank and we need you to pull that crank. That is a collective based on fear, which is mainly our experience with collectives because we live in a world based on fear. So the collectives we've tried often fall apart and they often become dictatorial themselves. You know, what they call that? The tyranny of the majority, right? But this is not a majority rules. This is everybody wants everybody else to be as fulfilled as they can be. So you want to stop, you know, hauling bricks and you want to paint pictures? Go do it. The system will support you to do that because we need people who do art. Art is important, you see. So is moving bricks important. And we want everybody to, you know, do as best they can. So it doesn't mean that it's unlimited and everybody can do whatever they want. There's going to be some requirements, obviously. You know, somebody has to take out the garbage, even if nobody wants to. Somebody's going to have to take out the garbage. Perhaps you'll get robots to do the things that mostly people don't want to do. You know, the robots take out the garbage. But in any case, you know, there are things that have to be done. So it's not like everything will be possible to everybody, but to the extent that it can be made possible, it will be, because that's a very positive society that you would live in. So you will have the maximum amount of free will in that state, the maximum amount of individuality to do what you want in that state than you would in any other kind of a system. There's always going to be some constraints on a system, you know, on what you do and when you do it and so on. But those constraints will be minimal in this collective based on love. So that's what we have to look forward to. Sounds good, doesn't it?
It really does.
It really does. Yes.
Yeah. Well, this has been a very interesting show. It's
not what you expected at all, well, I bet. It never is.
It's always fun, Tom. All right. Well, you've been listening to News for the Heart. We have been getting to the heart of what matters with Tom Campbell. This has been a very interesting show. I'm looking forward to seeing where we go next month.
Yeah, probably get a lot of comments on this because this is a different way of seeing the world, and a different way of finding your place in reality. A very different viewpoint than you'll find anywhere else. So you'll find it here, right on News from the Heart.
There you go. All right. Thanks, Tom.
You're welcome.
Have a question for Lori and want to be on the next News from the Heart show? Drop us a line via instantfeedback@bmajor.org. News from the Heart is brought to you by Intuitive Soul and is produced by Major Radio for Clear Channel's iHeartRadio and bmajor.org.